When you board an airplane, you're not just entering a metal tube that will transport you from one place to another. You're stepping into a microcosm of society's hierarchies. First-class passengers sip champagne while coach travelers squeeze past them with their carry-ons. This physical embodiment of status differences isn't just uncomfortable, it's combustible. Research shows air rage incidents are almost 4 times higher on planes with first-class cabins, and when coach passengers board at the front, parading past the privileged, incidents double. What's fascinating is that these tensions arise even when everyone aboard is relatively well off. The mere presence of relative differences creates friction. This phenomenon extends far beyond air travel. The psychological impact of inequality, feeling poorer than others, affects our decision-making, health, and happiness in profound ways that mirror the effects of actual poverty. Today, the richest 85 people globally possess more wealth than the poorest 3.5 billion combined. In America, the top 1% capture over 20% of all income. While the poorest Americans' inflation-adjusted incomes have remained relatively flat since 1967, the upper classes have become steadily wealthier, creating a sensation similar to sitting on a stationary train while another departs. Even standing still feels like falling behind. This book isn't about the economic causes of inequality, but rather its psychological effects, how the wealth of others changes our experience of the world, why feeling poor subtracts years from your life, and how financial insecurity leads to seemingly self-defeating decisions. The impact of inequality on our psychology creates a broken ladder that affects everyone climbing it, regardless of which rung they occupy. I discovered I was poor when a new lunch lady asked me for $1.25, money I didn't have. Though nothing about my family's finances had changed, that moment transformed my perception completely. I began noticing differences between myself and classmates who paid for lunch, their better shoes, haircuts, even their less southern accents. A social ladder suddenly stretched before me, and I, once merely shy, became almost completely silent at school. Surprisingly, our subjective perceptions of status are largely disconnected from objective measures like income and education. When asked to place themselves on a 10-rung status ladder, only about 20% of people's self-placement correlates with traditional status markers. Yet these subjective perceptions powerfully predict health outcomes, decision quality, and even lifespan. We constantly compare ourselves to others to determine if we have enough, though these comparisons operate largely in the background of our awareness. Despite this, we mysteriously manage to rate ourselves as above average in most domains, the Lake Wobegon effect. Even hospitalized accident victims rate themselves as better than average drivers regardless of who caused their accidents. A stunning 94% of college professors believe they're better teachers than their colleagues, and most people rate themselves as more objective and less biased than average. Our status obsession isn't uniquely human. Primates share this trait. Rhesus macaques will sacrifice rewards just to look at high-status monkeys while requiring extra payment to view low-status ones. This preoccupation with status is ancient, appearing across species that diverged 25 million years ago. Though early humans lived in relatively egalitarian hunter-gatherer societies for 100,000 years, agriculture's advent 10,000 years ago enabled wealth accumulation and dramatically steeper hierarchies. Today's inequality has reached levels not seen since before the Great Depression. When researchers Norton and Ariely asked Americans about wealth distribution, they found people greatly underestimate inequality's extremity. When shown two wealth distributions without labels, one representing the United States and one Sweden, a striking 92% chose the Swedish model, including both Republicans, 90%, and Democrats, 94%. This confirms philosopher John Rawls's prediction that behind a veil of ignorance, reasonable people prefer more equality. our evolved appetite for status creates a mismatch with modern extreme inequality, similar to how our cravings for sugar and fat lead to health problems in food-abundant environments. For thousands of centuries, humans evolved climbing social ladders only a few rungs high. Today, we face skyscraper-tall ladders that our Stone Age psychology isn't equipped to handle. Our perception of reality is fundamentally relative, not absolute. Just as the checkerboard illusion demonstrates how identical gray squares appear different depending on context, our judgments about wealth, status, and even basic sensations like hunger and weight are shaped by comparison. Studies reveal how profoundly context shapes perception. Brian Wansink's ingenious bottomless soup bowl experiment showed that people with imperceptibly refilling bowls ate nearly twice as much as others, yet felt equally full. Their satiation determined more by visual cues than actual calories consumed. Similarly, Donald Brown's weight perception studies demonstrated that we make sophisticated comparisons, instinctively deciding which comparisons matter and which don't. Social status comparisons operate with remarkable efficiency. Even 3-year-olds can accurately identify social class distinctions, as demonstrated when the author's daughter perfectly categorized her classmates as rich or poor based on their parents' professions. Michael Krauss and Datcher Keltner found adults can accurately judge other social class after watching just 1 minute of conversation, with higher status individuals showing more disengagement, grooming, doodling, while lower status individuals worked harder to be liked. Most strikingly, these comparisons often happen unconsciously. When research participants were subliminally exposed to Michael Jordan versus Pope John Paul for just milliseconds, they subsequently rated their own athletic abilities lower after the Jordan exposure. Our brains constantly make these comparisons without our awareness, explaining why feelings of inferiority or competitiveness can arise seemingly from nowhere. The brain's reward circuit processes both monetary rewards and relative status using the same neural pathways. James Olds and Peter Milner's classic experiments with rats showed that direct stimulation of these reward centers was so compelling that rats would forego food and water, even cross electrified floors to press a button that delivered this stimulation. For humans, proving ourselves better than others, even in trivial card games with no prizes, triggers similar reward responses, making status competition nearly impossible to resist. The chapter explores how inequality creates a social whiplash effect in places like Durham, North Carolina, where extreme wealth and poverty exist mere blocks apart. Despite having a slightly higher average income than Columbus, Durham experiences higher crime rates and struggling schools because of its greater economic inequality. This stark contrast becomes visible when a local police officer warns about safety even in neighborhoods near his own restored historic home. From a psychological perspective, poverty and inequality are deeply intertwined. We perceive our wealth by comparison to context, with relentless social comparing meaning that when the rich get richer, everyone else feels poorer. This explains why high inequality places, where luxury and desolation exist side by side, somehow increase squalor in everyone's lives. Consider Jason from rural Kentucky, whose life trajectory moved from tobacco farming to auto body work to methamphetamine production after his business failed, ultimately landing him in prison. Similarly, Chicago drug dealers studied by sociologist Sudhir Venkatesh earned only minimum wage despite extreme risks. The gang's philosophy emphasized taking immediate rewards because nothing can be predicted. When explaining such behaviors, people typically default to either character flaws or environmental factors. Both miss the larger point. Human nature prepares us to respond differently to resource-rich versus resource-poor environments. Growing up poor often creates a now bias, an aversion to planning that seems self-defeating but makes sense in uncertain conditions. From an evolutionary perspective, organisms must balance energy between survival and reproduction. When times are good and the future seems secure, the slow strategy prevails, waiting to have children until fully prepared to support them well. But in harsh, uncertain environments, a fast strategy becomes advantageous, reproducing early and often because survival isn't guaranteed. This isn't conscious calculation, but rather evolutionary adaptation. Our ancestors who successfully toggled between fast strategies in hard times and slow strategies in good ones left more descendants. Biologists have confirmed this pattern across species, including fruit flies experimentally subjected to high mortality rates, which began reproducing earlier than their safe group counterparts. In humans, women in Chicago's poorer neighborhoods gave birth earlier than those in affluent areas, with age at first birth correlating almost perfectly with neighborhood life expectancy. Girls raised in poor, dangerous environments not only choose to have children sooner, but actually reach puberty earlier, a biological adaptation to environmental uncertainty. These effects extend beyond reproduction to financial decision-making, with people feeling relatively poor becoming more present-focused and risk-taking. Kartar's bumblebee research reveals a natural gambling experiment. Sea blush flowers offer low risk, low reward, with consistent modest nectar, while dwarf huckleberry provides high risk, high reward, with some flowers containing jackpots and others none. When Kartar manipulated bee colonies by stealing nectar from some and giving it to others, the results were striking. Well-fed bees played it safe with sea blush, while desperate bees gambled on huckleberry. This nothing-to-lose theory extends to humans. When facing desperate needs like owing rent money, people often choose riskier options with lower probability but higher potential payoffs. In laboratory experiments, participants merely informed about high inequality took greater gambling risks than those told about equal outcomes. Google search data confirms this pattern. States with higher income inequality show more searches related to risky financial decisions, sexual behavior, and substance use. The chapter reveals how our political beliefs are fundamentally shaped by relative economic position rather than absolute wealth. As inequality increases, political polarization intensifies in ways that threaten democratic discourse. Laboratory experiments conducted across multiple universities show that participants who feel superior in status not only strongly oppose redistribution policies, but also view those who disagree as fundamentally incompetent, irrational, and unworthy of equal voting rights. When subjects were led to believe their earnings were superior through merit, they voted overwhelmingly to reject or discount the votes of those who disagreed with them, while those who felt economically inferior consistently wanted everyone's vote to count equally, regardless of economic status. Political scientist Nolan McCarty's groundbreaking research demonstrates that polarization and inequality have followed strikingly similar trajectories since 1947. Both metrics remained relatively low through the prosperous post-war decades of the 1950s and 1960s, when strong labor unions and progressive taxation helped maintain a robust middle class. However, they began rising in tandem in the mid-1970s as union power declined, tax policy shifted, and globalization accelerated. The correlation between inequality and polarization has remained remarkably consistent ever since, with both reaching historic highs in recent years. As economic worlds diverge, political divisions intensify in multiple dimensions. People increasingly view political opponents not as well-meaning individuals with different approaches to shared problems, but as fundamental enemies of their values and way of life. Extensive polling data shows that Americans holding very unfavorable opinions of the opposing party have steadily increased over three decades, with particularly sharp rises during economic downturns. By 2014, about a third of respondents considered members of the opposite party a direct threat to national well-being, up from just 15% in 1994. Even more troubling, significant percentages reported they would be very upset if their children married someone from the opposing party. 50% of Republicans and 30% of Democrats expressed this view. These tribal divisions extend beyond politics into social relationships, with Americans increasingly living, working, and socializing in politically homogeneous bubbles. These trends pose serious dangers to democratic stability, because when political opponents become perceived enemies, people begin to justify extreme responses and abandon democratic norms. The common refrain becomes, "How can you expect to reason with idiots and maniacs?" This dehumanization of political opponents correlates strongly with support for anti-democratic measures and political violence. Research shows that economic inequality fuels this cycle by increasing status anxiety and social distance between groups, making it harder for citizens to see common ground or empathize with those holding different views. The relationship between wealth and health is striking but complex. While poverty in developing nations clearly impacts mortality through lack of basic necessities, the pattern within developed countries reveals something more nuanced. In America's poorest zip codes, death rates nearly double compared to the richest areas. A British civil service study shows mortality increasing with each step down the occupational ladder, even among the relatively privileged. Most revealing is the difference between countries versus within countries. Between nations, the curve relating income to lifespan bends. Very rich countries cease having life expectancy advantages over moderately wealthy ones. But within wealthy nations, the relationship remains linear, with no flattening after basic needs are met. Nancy Adler's research demonstrates that subjective status, where people place themselves on the status ladder, predicts health better than actual income or education. This suggests relative position matters more than absolute wealth for health outcomes in developed societies. Indeed, across developed nations, those with greater income equality show longer life expectancies, even controlling for average income. The same pattern appears across American states. The pathways connecting inequality to health involve specific conditions like heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and obesity-related problems, often stemming from behaviors like smoking, poor diet, and limited exercise that become more prevalent in high inequality environments. A striking exception emerged in the 2010s. Death rates for middle-aged white Americans, particularly those without college degrees, have been rising since the 1990s while declining for all other groups. These deaths come primarily from deaths of despair, cirrhosis, suicide, and painkiller overdoses, reflecting violated expectations among a group historically privileged but now facing stagnant mobility. The stress response explains much of inequality's physical toll. This system prepares the body for crisis by flooding it with hormones like adrenaline and cortisol that redirect resources from long-term maintenance to immediate survival. While brilliant for short-term threats, chronic activation of this system, common under conditions of low status and inequality, damages the cardiovascular system, disrupts metabolism, and triggers harmful inflammation. Robert Sapolsky's studies of baboons in Kenya revealed that lower-ranking animals had higher stress hormone levels and more stress-related illnesses, like ulcers. When tuberculosis killed off the most dominant males in one troop, creating a flatter hierarchy, the subordinate males showed decreased stress hormones. Laboratory studies with monkeys confirmed that rank causes stress, not vice versa. When dominant animals were removed, middle management monkeys showed immediate stress reduction. In humans, studies consistently show that people with lower incomes have higher levels of stress hormones and inflammation. This biological crisis management, prioritizing immediate needs at the expense of long-term health, makes evolutionary sense, but ultimately accelerates aging and disease. Our minds constantly seek patterns in randomness, from seeing religious figures in food to filling in blind spots in our vision. This pattern-seeking tendency is fundamental to human perception, making it difficult to recognize true randomness. We perceive sequential lottery numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, as less random than scattered ones, 43, 7, 17, 38, 9, 24, though both are equally probable. This phenomenon, known as apophenia, extends beyond numbers to everyday experiences, like finding shapes in clouds or hearing hidden messages in songs played backwards. This need for pattern becomes stronger when we feel powerless. Experiments show that people made to feel helpless are 3 times more likely to see images in random static. Similarly, social disconnection leads people to anthropomorphize objects and believe in supernatural entities. Studies demonstrate that individuals experiencing social exclusion are more likely to name their cars, talk to their plants, or attribute human-like qualities to household appliances. During periods of uncertainty, like economic downturns or natural disasters, reports of paranormal experiences typically increase. About half of Americans believe in some conspiracy theory, from government cover-ups to secret cabals controlling world events. These theories flourish among those who feel powerless against those in power, with belief patterns shifting based on which political party governs. Distrust is so powerful that people can simultaneously believe contradictory conspiracy theories. For instance, studies show individuals may believe Princess Diana was both murdered and faked her own death, or that Osama bin Laden was both already dead and still alive when U.S. forces raided his compound. We also maintain belief in a just world by distorting our perceptions. In experiments, observers derogated victims of unfair treatment rather than question the fairness of the world. For example, when shown videos of individuals receiving electric shocks, participants rated victims who stoically endured pain as more virtuous than those who showed distress. Similarly, people randomly assigned higher pay rates rated themselves as superior workers, while those paid less agreed with this assessment, demonstrating how quickly we internalize and justify inequality. Religious belief offers the ultimate psychological comfort, a benevolent, all-powerful being controlling the universe. Studies confirm that when people feel helpless or perceive the world as chaotic, they develop stronger convictions in a controlling God. Natural disasters, economic crises, and personal hardships often correlate with increased church attendance and prayer frequency. Contrary to theological expectations, suffering correlates with increased religious faith across U.S. states. The more people suffer, the stronger their belief in God becomes. The relationship between economic development and religiosity follows a clear pattern globally. Wealthier countries tend to be less religious than poorer ones. However, the United States stands as a notable exception, being both wealthy and highly religious. Research reveals that income inequality, not just average income, explains this anomaly. Highly inequality countries remain more religious regardless of wealth. This pattern holds true across different cultures and continents, suggesting that economic insecurity and social inequality drive religious conviction more than absolute poverty or wealth. Countries with strong social safety nets and lower inequality, like those in Scandinavia, consistently show lower levels of religious adherence. My first encounter with race came as a small child in a Kentucky grocery store when my mother quickly covered my mouth before I could finish a sentence about a tall African-American man, her reflexives revealing societal anxieties about race. Children mirror the prejudices of their society, raising uncomfortable questions about our culture. While racial and economic inequalities are distinct issues, they increasingly intersect as income inequality rises while racial inequality slowly diminishes. America's history with racial discrimination spans from slavery's beginning in 1619 through Jim Crow laws, with legal racial oppression ending only a half century ago, less than a single lifetime from segregated schools and water fountains. Polling shows Americans expressing overtly racist views have declined to single digits, but perceptions about discrimination differ dramatically by race. White Americans believe anti-white discrimination has steadily increased, while anti-black discrimination has sharply declined, viewing discrimination as a zero-sum game where, by the 2000s, they judged discrimination against whites as more prevalent than against blacks. The economic data contradicts this perception. The income gap between white and black families has remained virtually unchanged since the 1960s, with black families earning only 59% of what white families earned in 2011, barely improved from 55% in 1967. Despite narrowing gaps in educational attainment, these improvements haven't translated to closing income disparities. This bias extends to life or death decisions. Florida inmates who appear blacker receive sentences 7 to 8 months longer for identical crimes, regardless of their actual race. In Pennsylvania, defendants who looked blacker were more likely to receive death sentences when the victim was white. Police shootings of unarmed black men demonstrate how split-second decisions rely on cultural expectations, where reaching for a wallet can be misinterpreted as reaching for a gun. Economic status and prejudice are deeply interrelated. Studies dating back to 1940 found that when cotton prices fell in the South, lynchings of black people increased. Modern research confirms economic anxieties fuel racial conflict. Analysis of police shootings found unarmed black men were 3.5 times more likely to be shot than unarmed whites overall, with even higher disparities in counties with greater income inequality. Successfully managing social comparison requires balancing upward and downward comparisons. Downward comparisons aren't just about Schadenfreude, they can foster gratitude when we recognize our circumstances could be worse. Upward comparisons can motivate us, but only if our targets are realistic. The key is comparing with lucidity, using both upward and downward comparisons to create brackets around our experience, acknowledging things could be better while recognizing they could be worse. Where we live profoundly impacts our lives. Though 40% of Americans never leave their hometowns and another 20% stay within their home state, those who move for economic opportunity typically earn higher incomes. Moving from high-poverty neighborhoods yields remarkable benefits. Children are more likely to attend college, less likely to become single parents, and earn 31% more by their mid-20s. Even those in the top 20% should care about inequality. High inequality correlates with increased crime, stress-related illness, and political polarization, degrading quality of life for everyone. It also accelerates the social comparison treadmill. In high inequality states, Google searches for luxury goods spike, though such purchases don't increase well-being. Some entrepreneurs are addressing inequality directly. CEO Dan Price increased his company's minimum salary to $70,000 while reducing his own from $1 million, based on research showing income benefits level off above that threshold. Though some executives quit, employee retention improved and the business thrived. Perhaps most powerful is reconnecting with our core values. When people write about personally important values, they become less concerned with status symbols, show reduced physiological stress when evaluated by others, and demonstrate greater willingness to delay gratification. In educational settings, brief values affirmation exercises reduce the achievement gap between black and white students by 40%, with benefits lasting years. These surprisingly effective interventions require only a few minutes of attention and a perspective shift, from unconsciously measuring our worth against others to consciously considering what genuinely matters to us. The developing science of inequality has illuminated how human nature is deeply interwoven with the status ladder. Understanding the behavioral science of inequality can help us live more gracefully in this vertical world until we can reshape the ladder itself.